I don't like your tone, son.
They won't reconsider.
Levi's voice is mild, unbothered.
The Air Force has no height restrictions,
Isaac says with his mouth full.
And they like people with fancy degrees.
Yes, Levi. His mother now. And the Air Force will only take you until you're 39. The Navy is...
42,
Isaac supplies. Yes, 42. You don't have a lot of time to make the decision. I thought Levi's parents were probably not as terrible as he made them out to be, but they're 10 times worse. And the Army's 35. How old are you, Levi?
32, Mom.
Well, the Army probably wouldn't be your first choice. What about the French Foreign Legion? I ask, twirling a lock of purple hair. Forks stop clinking. Three pairs of eyes study me with distrust. Levi's just alert, as though curious at what might happen. God, what have these people done to him?
What are the age requirements for the French Foreign Legion?
Why would he want to join another country's army?
The colonel asks icily.
Why would he want to join the U.S. Army?
I quit back. I cannot believe that rotten Tim Carson spawned from a loving, perfect family, and someone who's as perfect and loving as Levi comes from such rotten relatives.
Or the Air Force, or the Navy, or the Boy Scouts. It's obviously not his calling. It's not as though he works as an accountant who money launders for a drug cartel. He's a NASA engineer cited by thousands of people. He has a high-paying position.
I actually have no idea how much Levi makes, but I lift one eyebrow and carry on. He's not wasting his life in a dead-end job. Uh-oh, number six. The drinking game was totally a missed opportunity. It sure would make the silence more bearable as it stretches and stretches and stretches until the colonel breaks it.
Ms. Königswasser, you are very rude. She's not.
Levi interrupts firmly, calmly but forcefully.
And she's a doctor.
Levi holds his father's gaze for a moment and then moves on to his brother.
What about you, Isaac? How's work been?
I lean back in my chair, noticing the suspicious, hateful way the colonel is looking at me. I give him a fake, bright smile and tune in to what Levi is saying. The second we're in the truck, I take off my Converse, push the soles of my feet against the dashboard, and Quasimoto's in full sight, I explode.
I cannot believe it!
Hmm?
It's unfathomable. We should make a damn case study out of this. Science would publish it. Nature. The New England Journal of Damn Medicine. It would get me a Nobel Prize. Marie Curie, Malala Yousafzai, B. Königswasser.
Sounds lovely. What's it again?
At the very least, we'd get shortlisted. We could take a trip to Stockholm, see the fjords, meet up with my wayward sister.
He turns up the AC.
I'll take you to Stockholm whenever you like, but you'll have to give me a topic if you want me to follow this conversation.
I just cannot believe how well adjusted you are. I mean, okay, you and I have had our issues when it comes to social interactions, but I'm befuddled that you haven't turned out a titanic psychopath, despite the family you came from. There has to be a miracle in there, no?
Ah.
He half smiles.
Do you want to get ice cream?
You had neither nature nor nurture on your side.
So, no ice cream?
Of course, yes, ice cream.
He nods and takes a right.
There was some therapy involved.
How much therapy are we talking about here?
Couple years.
Did it entail a brain transplant?
Just lots of talking through how my inability to functionally communicate my needs stemmed from a family that never allowed me to. Same old.
They still don't allow you. They're trying to erase you and turn you into something else.
I am incensed, enraged. Insensibly enraged. I want to mutate into Beezilla and pillage the extended Ward family at the next Thanksgiving. Levi better invite me.
I've tried to reason with them. I've yelled. I've explained myself calmly. I've tried a lot of things, believe me.
He sighs.
Eventually, I had to accept what my therapist always said. All you can change is your own reaction to events.
Your therapist sounds great.
He was.
But I still want to commit patricide.
It's not patricide if it's not your own father.
An angry scream bubbles out of me. You should never talk to them again. He smiles.
That will send a strong message.
No, seriously. They don't deserve you.
They're not good, for sure. I've considered the possibility of cutting them off many times. But my brothers and my mom are much better when my father isn't around. And anyway,
he hesitates.
Today wasn't that bad. It might have been the best dinner I've had with them in a long time, which I'll chalk up to you telling my father to can it and shocking him into temporary speechlessness.
If that dinner was not bad, then I'm a K-pop idol. I gaze at the dusky Houston lights, thinking that the way his family treats him should diminish him in my eyes. Realizing the truth is just the opposite. There's something patient about the way he quietly stands up for himself, about the way he sees others. Another pang near my heart. I don't know what they're about. I just really... Levi?
Hmm?
I want to tell you something.
I told you, your lungs are not shrinking because you're training for a 5K.
My lungs are totally shrinking, but that's not it.
What then?
I take a deep breath, still staring out the window. I really, really, really like you. He doesn't reply for a long moment. Then,
I'm pretty sure I like you more.
I doubt it. I just want you to know, not everyone is like your family. You can be you with me. You can talk, say, do however you want. And I'll never hurt you like they did. I make myself smile at him. It's easy now. I promise I don't bite. He reaches over to take my hand, his skin warm and rough against mine. He smiles back just a little.
You could rip me to shreds, Bea.
We are silent for the rest of the drive. Schrodinger burrowed into my backpack, tore a package of kale chips, decided they were not to his liking, and went for a nap with his head pillowed on the half-empty bag. I burst into laughter and forbid Levi to wake him up before I can take a million pictures to send Rika. It's the best thing to happen all day. A reminder that while Levi's actual family might suck balls, his chosen one is the best. I'm very impressed, I coo to Schrodinger while petting his fur.
Don't cuddle him, or he'll feel rewarded,
Levi warns me.
Are you feeling rewarded, kitty?
Schrodinger purrs. Levi sighs.
Whatever Bee's doing, do not experience it as cuddles. Those are punishment pets,
he says, in what he probably means as a firm tone, but is instead adorably helpless. And I get another pang to my heart and my ovaries. I do hope he'll have kids. He'd be an amazing dad. Those chips were on my desk for days, and Felicet never managed to open them.
And that's not at all because Felicet doesn't exist,
Levi yells from the kitchen.
You should teach Felicet your ways,
I whisper to Schrodinger, and then join Levi in the kitchen, just in time to see him throw away what's left of my unjustifiably overpriced Whole Foods chips.
Are you still hungry? Should I make you food?
I shake my head.
You sure? I don't mind making.
He falls silent as I fall to my knees. His eyes widen as my smile does.
Bea,
he says, though he doesn't quite say it. He mouths it breathlessly, like he often does when I touch him. And now my fingers are on his belt, which qualifies as touching, right?
Bea,
he repeats, a little guttural this time. I said I'd do stuff, I tell him with a smile. The clink of his belt buckle bounces off the kitchen appliances. His fingers weave into my hair.
I figured you meant watching sports with me. Or another of your burnt, stir fries.
I take him out of his boxers and wrap my small hand around him. He's completely hard already. Huge. Shockingly warm against my flesh. He smells like soap and himself, and I want to bottle his delicious scent and bring it with me always. I'm not very good at stir fries. My breath is on his skin, making his cock twitch. This, I hope, I can do well. I'm not exactly confident, and maybe I'm a little clumsy too. But when I softly lick the head, there is a quiet, surprised groan coming from above me, and I think that maybe I'll be fine. I close my lips around him, feel Levi's hands tighten on my scalp, and my insecurities melt. I don't know why we haven't done this before. It has to do, perhaps, with how impatient he usually is. Impatient to be in me, on me, with me. There is often an undercurrent of haste with us. Like we both want, need, deserve to be as close as physically possible, as quickly as physically possible, and it doesn't leave much time for delays, I guess. Levi wants it, though. It might not be something he'd ever ask for, but I can see the shape of pleasure on his face, hear his intakes of breath. I suckle right beneath the head, and he lets out a sound of shocked, overwhelming pleasure. Then he threads his fingers through my hair and starts guiding me. He's too thick for me to do much, but I try to relax, to let myself enjoy this, lose myself to the taste, the fullness, his soft, deep groans as he tells me how good it feels, how much he loves my mouth, how much he loves this, how much he loves. Fuck. Softly, with his thumb, he traces the bulge of his cock through the skin of my cheek. My lips stretched obscenely around him.
You really are everything I've ever wanted,
he mutters, gentle, reverent, hoarse. And then he's angling me again, this time a rhythm that's deeper, purposeful, working my jaw for his pleasure. When he holds me close and says,
I'm going to come in your mouth,
like it's inevitable, like we both need this too badly to stop. I whimper around his flesh from how much I want this for him. He loses control a little when he comes, his grunts deep and unusually rough, his grip vice-like, and I feel his orgasm course through me as if it were my own. I suck him gently through the end of it, and when I look up at him, I'm wet and swollen and I feel empty, trembling, a messy lump on the floor.
Open your mouth, he rasps.
I blink at him, confused. He cups my cheek.
I want you to open your mouth and show me.
I comply, and the sound he makes, possessive and hungry and pleased at last, travels through me like a wave. He massages the back of my neck while I swallow. His thumb caresses my jaw, and when I smile up at him, he stares at me like I've just gifted him with something divine. It's a long night, this one. Somehow different from all the others. Levi takes his time undressing me, stopping often, lingering, losing track of his progress as if distracted by my flesh, my curves, the sounds I make. I moan, I squirm, I beg, and he still won't slide inside, too busy tracing the swell of my breast, pressing his tongue against the bump of my clit, nuzzling against the skin of my throat. I teeter on the edge for too long, and so does Levi, immobile within me, then thick and delicious and slow, slow inside and then slow out, long, drugging kisses stretching the pleasure between us, making my body twitch for his own. And then he looks down at me, hands twined with my hands, eyes twined with my eyes, breath twined with my breath. B. He says, just my name, half gasp, all heated plea. He stares down at me as though I own him, as though his future hangs from my hands, as though everything he's ever wanted, I hold it within me. It makes my chest hurt and leap with a dangerous, thunderous kind of joy. I close my eyes not to see, and let the liquid heat swell inside me like the tide, high and low, all night long.
21. Right inferior frontal gyrus. Superstition. They say disasters come in threes, but it's not true. It's just a quirk of the human mind, always on the lookout for patterns and random statistical observations to make sense of chaos. For instance, say you're Dr. Marie Sklodowska-Curie, circa 1911. Your health has been declining after decades spent frolicking in kiddie pools of polonium. Everything's painful and you can barely see, walk, sleep, frolic in more polonium. Sucks, right? Well, things could suck more. You decide to do that thing you've been putting off, applying for membership at the French Academy of Sciences. You have 2 Nobel Prizes, so you should be a shoo-in, yes? No. The Academy rejects you, and instead admits this Edouard Branly guy, who I'm sure has many great qualities, such as a penis. If you're wondering, who's Edouard? Never heard of this guy. That's exactly my point. Excellent job, F.A. of S. Take your seat on the loser side of history next to the University of Krakow. Our tally is 2 major bummers. And you're probably thinking, the shit cake has been frosted. No other catastrophe will happen for a while. But you forgot the cherry on top. Someone breaks into your young stud muffin's apartment, steals your love letters, and sells them to the Fox News equivalent of early 19th century France. Jean Hannity has a field day. Imagine being Dr. Curie. Imagine sitting in your minuscule Paris apartment trying to eat a camembert baguette while the mob rages outside your window because you dared, gasp, to be an immigrant, to be a woman in STEM, to fuck. Wouldn't you tell yourself there's a reason this cluster of shit came about? Saturn ascending to the house of Sagittarius. Not enough lamb sacrificed to the spaghetti monster. Bad things come in threes. We're only humans. We're full of whys, drowning in whys. Every once in a while, we need a bit of because. And if it's not readily available, we make it up. Long story long, despite popular belief, a saying is just a saying. And disasters do not come in threes. Except when they do. The first is on Thursday night, right after the successful dress rehearsal for Friday's presentation. I'm almost looking forward to seeing Trevor tomorrow. Well, not him, but his face when he realizes what my simpering womanly brain has accomplished. I distractedly exchange a high five with Lamar while checking my phone. And I'm so shocked by my Twitter notifications that I forget my hand in midair. They're blowing up. In a bad way. As they often do. Except that this time the chaotic mess of insults isn't coming from the incels or the STEM lords or the men's rights activists, but from other women in STEM.
You gonna leave it there?
Lamar asks, pointing at my arm. I smile weakly and walk away. At Sabine March, I cannot believe how you have betrayed us. At Astrolina, I hope STC presses charges, you bitch. Hashtag what would Marie do is over party. At Sarah underscore 08980, hundreds of women in STEM have been working tirelessly for hashtag fair graduate admissions, and all along you have been pretending to be an ally while only looking out for your gain. Shame. The last tweet is from someone I've chatted with as recently as yesterday. We talked about the events she was organizing. She asked me for advice, told me she loved my account. I blink at my screen and begin scouring for the source of whatever the hell this is. I find it soon enough, on the account of one Benjamin Green, a name that's familiar but not easy to place until I read the Twitter bio. VP at STC. I frown, and then I see the tweet. It's a screenshot. Many screenshots of a conversation that happened in a private Twitter chat between Mr. Green and someone else,
someone whose icon looks a lot like Marie Curie wearing sunglasses. I read the name. Et what would Marie do? Me? Impossible. I've never chatted with this guy. I rapidly scan the handle again. 1, 2, 3 times, looking for typos or missing letters that would signal an imposter. There are none. I frown and start reading the conversation. The timestamp is from last night. Et what would Marie do? Hi, Jonathan. I'm aware this is a bit unorthodox, but I hope that what I have to say will be beneficial to both of us. I know STC has been struggling with the negative publicity hashtag fair graduate admissions has brought upon you, and that you are concerned about the movement gaining even further momentum. As you know, I'm one of its most prominent activists and played a significant role in its inception. You probably see me as an enemy, but it doesn't have to be like that. Et what would Marie do? I'd like to offer you a deal. I'm open to help shift the narrative toward STC and to tell my followers and collaborators that the demands of hashtag fair graduate admissions are excessive, that while there might be a need for reform, we do need standardized testing, and therefore it would be in our best interest to work with companies that already exist to improve on instruments that are already widely utilized. Of course, I would not be doing this for free. My real name is redacted, in case you need to look up my credentials. I am open to hearing your offers. I blink at my screen, floored. Then I scroll up to read the public comment Green made on top of the screenshots. At J. Green STC. Hashtag fair graduate admissions activists and the universities and institutions who take them seriously should read what at what would Marie do, one of their leaders, asked of me. This is the real agenda of this movement. Extortion. At J. Green STC. At STC, we've decided not to make this individual's identity public, for now. We're consulting with our lawyers and keeping our options open. In the meantime, time to reconsider where you stand. Hashtag fair graduate admissions. I feel lightheaded, because I haven't been breathing. I force myself to inhale some air, in and out and in again. This has to be photoshopped. Yes, there's no other explanation. Very well done, but... In grad school, Annie photoshopped a tentacle coming out of her butt. Anything's possible, right? I sit at my desk, noticing that lots of people I've talked with recently have blocked me. Do they believe this rubbish? They can't possibly. They know me, right? Marie. Schmack, I just saw the STC shit show. Have you? I bounce my foot and wait for his answer. Minutes later, Rocio comes in and starts sliding stuff into her backpack. When I say sliding, what I mean is aggressively throwing as though she's practicing her pitch for an upcoming stoning. You okay? I ask, regretting it even before the words are out. I'm probably too anxious to help her with whatever she's going to tell me. No. Shit. Is Kaylee okay? No. She feels like crap. She zips up her backpack, forcefully sliding her arm through one of the straps. All the work we've been doing for hashtag fair graduate admissions flushed down the toilet because one of the leaders outed herself as a damn crook. I freeze. Of all the conversations, I cannot imagine one more uncomfortable, untimely, unpleasant. Lots of uns. I saw, I stammer. My mouth is dry. But is that even true? It's probably something made up. I bet it's not. People kept saying that STC's screenshots were fake, so he gave proof to some hashtag fair graduate admissions leaders. Marie really did slide into this guy's DMs and asked for money. She fucked us over. She was the one who started hashtag fair graduate admissions, so we won't be taken seriously any longer. That means lots of horrible things for lots of good people, and even for some evil ones. Like me, I'll have to spend thousands of dollars I don't have to retake a test that's less valid a predictor of my ability to succeed in grad school than the number of mummified scorpions I own.
which is 7, by the way.
Her voice breaks a little on the last word, which in turn breaks my heart. She looks away, but not before I can see the lone tear sliding down her face.
I won't get into Johns Hopkins. I'll be a jobless failure while Kaylee goes to grad school and forgets all about me.
I stand.
No. No, it won't happen. I'm just so disappointed.
She takes a deep breath, shuddering and despondent.
You can't trust anyone. The world really is a vampire.
She shrugs, backpack bouncing on her slim shoulder.
You should stop doing that, by the way.
What? I follow her gaze. She's staring at my hand where I'm furiously twisting my grandmother's ring.
Yesterday, I spent 15 minutes arguing with Guy about whether you're married. That's what happens when you wear other people's wedding rings, B.
Shit, 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 shit. Did Guy find out? He did seem a little distant today, but I thought he was just nervous about tomorrow's demonstration. Should I go find him to explain?
You going home? Rocio asks.
No, I was supposed to leave with Levi as usual. But I don't think I can pretend nothing happened. And telling him about this mess seems, well, I could, I guess. If there's someone I could trust with WWMD, it's Levi. But my shitty mood as I try to wrangle my online identity is probably more than he's bargained for.
Yeah, sure. I'll walk with you. I shoot Levi a quick text about the change of plans and fall in step with Rocio. He doesn't answer until I'm home, asking me if everything's okay, if I want him to pick me up, if he should stop by. A few seconds later, Schmack finally replies.
Schmack.
Yeah, I saw.
Marie. I have no idea what's happening. I never messaged Green, of course.
Schmack.
Problem is, people on hashtag fair graduate admission side say they have proof it was you.
Marie.
Please tell me you don't believe them.
Schmack.
I don't.
I close my eyes. Thank God.
Schmack.
Let me think about this, okay? Talk to some people. There must be a way to fix this. Also check your logs, in case you've been hacked.
I have not. There's nothing out of place. Every access to my account has been from Houston. I'm jittery, nervous, scared. I pace around my apartment, long and aggressively enough that it's probably a workout. I should log it into the stupid exercise app Levi made me download.
You'll keep track of your progress. It'll be rewarding. You know what else is rewarding? Don't say not working out, B.
Fine. I'm actually considering going for a run to clear my head. Have I been body snatched by aliens? When I get an email notification.
It's from a fancy legal firm. One that probably has 8 names on the wall and toilet seats covered in gold leaf. The message is innocent enough, but there's a PDF attached to it. I start skimming the content, and that's when my stomach and the world around me turn.
Dr. Königswasser, this letter is served as notice of your recent acts of unwarranted harassment. You are required to cease and desist all acts of harassment, including but not limited to producing tweets under the alias at What Would Marie Do, posting public content aimed at damaging the image of STC and its products, attempting to extort financial or other benefits from STC in exchange for unsolicited PR or other services. Sincerely, J.F. Timberworth, Attorney at Law, on behalf of STC.
22. Anterior cingulate cortex. Oh shit. I'm not sure how I spend the night after reading the letter. It's all a blur. The hours go by and I cry. I breathe. I try to figure out what this mess is. I feel angry, shocked, beaten, lonely, sad. Levi calls me twice, but I remember Rocio's lone tear glistening down her cheek, and feel too dirty and tainted to make myself pick up. What would Levi say if he knew? Would he believe me?
How could he, if SDC has my real name? I'm not sure I'd believe myself anymore. The following day, it takes all of my compartmentalizing skills to focus on work, and they're not very many. Pushing things out of my mind is not one of my talents, but I give a moderately good performance. Levi calls again in the morning, and again, I don't answer. But I text him that I've been swamped with Blink. Terrible excuse since we work together, and that I'm busy picking up Trevor at the airport. Not an excuse, but equally terrible.
Kramer couldn't come. Something about a WHO symposium, but he's very happy.
Trevor says instead of hi or how are you or other things normal, decent people start a conversation with.
And you know what happens when Kramer's happy.
He gives me a lab far away from you, at least down the hallway, possibly on a different floor, ideally in another building. If I even have a future in academia, if I don't get outed as a grossly hypocritical racketeer. Nope.
He funnels funds to our lab, that's what. When will the suits be ready?
I roll my eyes, driving out of arrivals. They're helmets, and theoretically the prototype is ready. Some adjustments will have to be made for each individual astronaut.
Right. You mentioned as much in one of the reports.
I talk about this in all the reports, but reading comprehension was never Trevor's forte.
The Ward guy, the one who's leading on NASA's side, must be a damn genius for getting this done so quickly.
I exhale slowly. I'm having a shitty enough day that I probably shouldn't complicate it by telling my boss that he's a urinal cake. Then again, because I'm having such a shitty day, I might not be able to help myself from telling him that he's a urinal cake. What a quandary. Dr. Ward and I are co-leads, I say, my tone harsher than it's ever been with Trevor. He must realize, because he gives me an irritated glance.
Yeah, but...
But? He looks out the window, chastised.
Nothing.
Better be. Trevor the urinal cake is the smallest of the big shots in attendance. There are two Texas congressmen, at least three of Boris's bosses, and lots of Space Center employees who aren't directly involved in Blink. I'm introduced to everyone, but don't retain anyone's name. There's a lot of impressive and can't wait to see the helmets in action and this is history in the making being thrown around, which makes me nervous and apprehensive. But I tell myself that it'll be fine. Right now, my job is the one thing I have under control. Thank Dr. Curie for that. The goal of the demonstration is to show that the helmet improves guys' attention during a flight simulation. Guests will observe on a large screen from the conference room next door, while Levi, the core engineering team, and I will be in the control room to make sure everything proceeds smoothly. I toy with the idea of taking 5 minutes alone with Guy to come clean about the marriage thing, but the throng and chaos make it impossible. I'm double-checking my protocols when Levi comes in, making a beeline to me.
Hey.
His eyes are serious. Dark green, beautiful like the underbrush of a forest. He drags a chair next to mine, the distance between us blurring the line between colleagues and something more. I should pull back, but no one's looking at us, and the sight of him overwhelms me anyway. It's like all those mysterious pangs elevated to the tenth. I realize that last night was the first we spent apart since whatever us is happened, and that being with him again feels like... No, it does not feel like home. Home is something else. Home is the new lab this gig is going to get me. Home is the publications I'll write about today. Home is the community of women in STEM I made for myself that I'll somehow have to fight for. That's home, not Levi. Hey, I say, averting my eyes.
You okay?
Nervous. You?
Fine.
He doesn't seem fine. I must be communicating it because he adds,
there's a mess. Not work-related. I'll explain later.
I nod, and for a wild, reckless second, I have the weird impulse of telling him about my mess. I should, shouldn't I? My name will get out sooner or later. If I tell him now, he'll believe that Marie, and therefore me, is a crook, like everyone else except for Schmack. No, I can't tell him. He wouldn't care anyway.
I have something for you,
he says, the corner of his lip curving in a small smile. The back of his hand brushes mine, and my heart squeezes. It likely seems accidental from the outside. It feels anything but. Yeah?
I'll show it to you later. It has to do with your imaginary cat.
I smile weakly. I can't wait for Felicet to puke on your keyboard. He shrugs.
Imaginary vomit's my favorite kind.
He presses his knee against mine and stands, stopping midway to whisper against the shell of my ear.
I missed you last night.
I shiver. He's gone before I can answer.
Loneliness is killing me, and I must confess, I still believe.
Once again, everyone in the control room laughs at Guy's bellowing. The situation in the conference room is probably the same.
That was lovely. Thank you, Brittany.
Levi murmurs through the mic, amused. We exchange a brief look. My heart's aflutter. I feel like I'm about to go on stage for a school play I've been practicing the whole year. But I'm an adult, and what's at stake is my professional hopes and dreams, which, I remind myself, are the only sort of hopes and dreams I allow. Ready to start?
I was born ready, baby.
Guy lifts one eyebrow under the visor of the helmet.
Well, after a labor that my mother often refers to as the most harrowing 43 hours of her life. Poor lady.
Levi shakes his head, smiling.
You know the drill, but this is what's going to happen. We're going to start an attention task on the screen. I'm being paid to play video games. Excellent. Then we'll activate the helmet when we're ready and measure your performance under both conditions for reaction time and accuracy. Got it. Starting in a few seconds, then.
Levi turns off the mic. He and I exchange another glance, this time lingering. This is it. We did it. You and I. Together. Then Levi turns around and nods at Lamar to start the routine. There isn't much I have to do, since the protocols have been programmed and are loaded to go. I lean back, eyes on the monitor, fixed on Guy's sitting form. I'll need to buy him a present, I think. A bottle of something expensive. Brittany concert tickets. For being so patient when I kept shooting beta bursts at his brain. For being so nice. For lying to him. Then the task loads, and I'm too busy observing to think much of anything. It starts like usual. Guy's job is to detect stimuli as they appear on the screen. He's an astronaut, and at baseline, he performs about 10 million times better than I, a regular, everyday wimp, ever could. A few minutes later, Levi gives another signal, and the brain stimulation protocol I wrote is activated. 10 seconds pass. 20. 30. I eye the estimates for the performance metrics. Nothing happens. Accuracy and reaction times are hovering around the same values as before. Shit. What's going on? I squirm nervously in my seat. The lag between the inception of the stimulation and the improvement in performance is usually over by now. I glance at Levi with a worried expression. But he's calm, sitting back in his chair with his arms folded on his chest, alternating looks between Guy and the values. The only sign of impatience is his fingers drumming on his bicep. He does that when he's focused. Levi. My Levi. I'm stimulating Guy's dorsal premotor cortex. Why the hell is he not improving? Suddenly, the numbers start to change. Accuracy skyrockets from 83% to 94%. Median reaction times decrease by tens of milliseconds. The new values oscillate and then keep steady. I swear the entire room sighs in relief in unison.
Sweet,
someone murmurs.
Sweet,
Lamar asks.
That's epic.
I turn to grin at Levi and find him already staring at me with a happy,
undecipherable expression. This, at least, is going great. The rest of my life's a shit show, but this is working. We made something good and useful and just plain badass. I told you, didn't I? What's reliable and trustworthy and never, ever abandoned Dr. Curie? Science. Science is where it's at. Until it's not. I'm the first to realize something's wrong. Most of the engineers are talking among one another, and Levi's eyes are still clinging to me with that curious, earnest expression. But both the values and the monitors are in my line of sight. So I notice the numbers changing to values we've never before seen, and the twitchy way guy's elbow is jerking. What's... I point at it. Levi immediately turns. Is he okay?
The arm?
Levi's brows knit.
I've never seen anything like that.
It's similar to what would happen if we stimulated his motor cortex, but we definitely aren't. Whoa! The twitches get significantly larger. Guy's entire body starts shaking. Levi turns on the mic.
Guy, everything okay in there?
No answer.
Guy, can you hear me?
Silence, and Levi's deepening frown.
Guy, do you?
Guy falls out of his chair with a loud thud, his body at once rigid and slack. The control room bursts into chaos. Everyone stands, half a dozen chairs scraping against the floor.
Stop the protocol!
Levi yells, and a second later he's out of the room and into the lab. I see him appear on the monitor and kneel next to Guy's spasming body, taking him into his arms. He turns him to the side and clears the floor of nearby objects. A seizure? Guy's having a seizure. Other people barge into the room, NASA physicians, engineers, and ask Levi questions about the stimulation protocol. He answers as best he can, still holding Guy in his arms as the doctors work around them. It's because of Penny. Levi knows what to do because of Penny. There's mayhem everywhere. People running in the hallways, in and out of the control room, screaming, swearing, asking questions without replies. Some are directed at me, but I cannot answer, cannot do anything but stare at Guy's face, at the way Levi is cradling him. I collapse back in my chair. After a minute or an hour, my eyes drift away. The helmet is on the floor, rolled to the farthest corner of the room.
Is Kowalski? He was driven to the hospital. Going to be okay?
Yeah, he regained consciousness. It's just a checkup, but
they gave him a fucking seizure.
What a disaster. The end of Blink for sure. God, the incompetence.
I'm a fortress. I'm impenetrable. I'm not even here. I don't look at anyone. I try my best not to listen as I walk to Boris's office after he hissed at me to be there stat. It was 4.5 minutes ago. I should hurry. I knock when I arrive, but enter before being invited to come in. Levi's already inside, staring at the pretty green of the Space Center outside the square window. I ignore him, even when I feel his eyes on me. The prickle of a glance asking for a response. I ignore him. I wonder what he's thinking. Then I don't wonder anymore. It probably cannot be borne anyway.
Where was the error?
Boris asks from behind the desk. He always looks tired and disheveled. But if he told me he was just run over by a truck, I'd believe him. I can't begin to comprehend the repercussions of today's events. For him, for NASA, for Levi.
Yet unclear,
Levi says, holding his eyes.
We're looking into it. Was there a hardware malfunction? We're ascertaining whether.
Bullshit!
A brief silence.
As soon as we know, you'll know. Levi, you see me as a paper pusher. You're probably right. I have become one. But let me remind you that I do have a degree in engineering, plus a couple of decades of experience on you, and while I'm by no means the creative genius you are, I'm well aware that it won't take you 3 weeks of system analyses to figure out whether there was a malfunction on the hardware side or...
There wasn't, I interrupt,
They both turn to me, but I only look at Boris. At least, I doubt it. I haven't run any analytics, but I'm sure the error was in the stimulation protocol. I swallow. On my side. He nods, tight-lipped.
What happened?
I don't know. My guess is that the stimulation was too intense or too high frequency, and either displaced or too diffuse. This caused widespread neuronal misfiring.
Okay.
He nods again.
How did it happen?
That I don't know. We spent weeks mapping Guy's brain, and nothing like that ever happened. The protocol was tailored to him. I bend my head, staring down at my hands. I'm ringing my Nona's ring as usual. It won't happen again, I'm sorry.
No, it won't.
He runs a hand down his face.
Blink's over.
There's a sharp intake of breath. Levi's. I look up.
What? This is not a mistake I can tolerate. You took someone who went through years of astronaut training and had him in a puddle on the floor. Guy's fine, but what if the next astronaut isn't?
I shake my head. There won't be a next astronaut.
There should have been no astronauts, especially not in front of half of NASA. Boris.
Levi is standing behind me, probably a little too close.
We tested this protocol over 10 times. Nothing similar ever happened. You rushed the demonstration when we could have waited weeks, and you vouched for B when NIH sent her here, and she gave a seizure to one of my astronauts.
Boris clenches his jaw, trying to calm down.
Levi, I don't blame you.
A loud knock. The door opens and things get even worse.
No, not Trevor, please. Not when I'm at my lowest.
And yet, Boris gestures for him to come in.
We were just discussing. I heard.
He shrugs darkly.
You weren't exactly quiet. So,
he says, clapping his hands.
I smoothed things over with the congressman. Told them Blink's still salvageable. Wait.
Boris frowns. I might throw up.
I understand there are many interests at play here, but not so fast. Clearly something went very wrong and someone.
Trevor interrupts. The look he gives me is full of contempt.
I heard what you were saying. Clearly the problems were with one specific person. And they can be solved by eliminating the weak link and putting another NIH researcher on the project. Josh Martin and Hank Malik applied for the position too. Are you an idiot?
Levi takes a step toward Trevor, looming over him.
You have no knowledge of your own scientists if you think Dr. Koenigswasser is a weak link.
Excuse me, I say. My voice is shaking. I can't cry. Not now. I don't think I'm needed for this conversation. I'll check on Guy and clear out my things. Yeah. I get out as fast as I can. I'm not 10 steps from the door when I hear feet running behind, then around me. Levi stops in front of me, a near desperate expression in his eyes.
B, we can still fix this. Come back in there and
I need to go. I try to keep my tone firm. But you need to stay in there and make sure that Blink actually happens. He gives me a disbelieving look.
Not without you. B, we have no idea what really went wrong. Boris is overreacting and Trevor's a fucking idiot. I'm not going to. Levi.
I let myself reach for his wrist, close my hand around it and squeeze. I'm asking you to go back in there and do what you have to do to make sure Blink happens. Please, do it for Peter, for Penny, and for me. It's a low blow. I can see it in his narrowing eyes, in the set of his jaw. But when I start walking again, he doesn't follow. And right now, that's all I want. 23.
Amygdala. Again. Fear.
Rika won't answer my calls because she's finally traveling to Norway. It might be for the best.
I'd just cry at her about neuronal depolarization and electromagnetic induction, which can't be healthy for me or edifying for her. I want to visit Guy in the hospital to bring him an edible arrangement, offer my firstborn in penance, self-flagellate at the foot of his bed. I'm not even sure where they brought him, if he's still there, and I doubt he wants to see me. Maybe I should text him. Do you hate me for giving you a seizure through my carelessness and sheer incompetence? Yes, no, maybe, please circle. It's probably a good thing that I'm alone with my thoughts. Paradoxically, it allows me not to think too much. Things, bad things, are going to happen soon. My connection with WWMD will be disclosed. A community I spent years building will turn against me. And I have no illusion that Trevor will renew my contract. It's staggering, but if I don't talk about it, I can pretend it's not happening. I eat a banana, first thing I've had in 24 hours, and go to my room. I pull my suitcase from under my bed, dust it off, and start folding my clothes. Jeans, a skirt I haven't gotten a chance to wear yet, my favorite teal top, a rain poncho, jeans. The suitcase is almost full when my doorbell rings. I sigh and force myself to go to the door, but I suspect I already know who it is. Turns out, I'm right.
Hey.
Levi looks tired, and like he's been running a hand through his hair, and very, very beautiful. My heart knots.
You're not answering your phone. I was worried.
Sorry, I forgot to check it. Is everything okay? He gives me a slightly incredulous look that I take to mean, no, absolutely nothing is okay, and follows me into the living room. Through the balcony doors, my eyes catch the hummingbird feeder. I should take it down, pack it. But the hummingbirds, maybe I could ask Rocio to hang it for me. Wouldn't want the little guy who's been coming around to find himself without dinner.
From Guy,
Levi sang. I whirl around. How is he?
Fine. Discharged. He asked me to tell you not to freak out and that he probably deserved it. And to thank you for the trip of a lifetime.
Levi rolls his eyes, but I can see the relief in him. Did he say if I can go see him?
He's resting, but we can go tomorrow. He'd love to see you.
His tone hardens ever so slightly.
B, he knows it's not your fault. A million things could have gone wrong, and none are exclusively your responsibility. Boris rushed the demonstration.
Because I let him rush it. I press my fingers into my eyes. I told him I could make it, and this mess would have happened anyway, just not publicly. I must have done something wrong. I must have forgotten to account for something. I don't know. I've been thinking about it, and I cannot figure out what the fuck I did wrong. Which means that someone else, someone who has a clue what they're doing, should be on this project with you. He blinks.
What do you mean?
What I just said, I guess. I shrug. I hope they send Hank. Josh is a prick. And you have to help me ensure that Rocio stays on. She deserves this. And could you write her a rec letter for grad school? I don't know if mine will.
No.
He steps forward and reaches out. His hand comes up to the back of my head, spanning from my nape to the curve of my throat. It feels so normal, familiar. He is so familiar.
B, no one's going to replace you. Blink is as much yours as it's mine. If it weren't for you, we'd still be stuck.
You don't understand. I take a step back. His touch lingers until I'm out of reach, until he has to let go. I'm out. Like Trevor said.
Trevor will change his fucking mind.
He won't. He shouldn't. Levi, today I endangered someone's safety. I jeopardized the existence of a project that's your best friend's legacy. I press my fingers to my lips. They're trembling. All of me is trembling. How can you even want me to stay?
Because I trust you. Because I know you. I know the person you are, the scientist you are, and...
His eyes fall on my bedroom, on my almost but not quite packed suitcase, open on the floor. He
He stiffens, pointing at it.
What's that?
I swallow. I told you. I can't, in all conscience, stay on Blink anymore. He stares at me, open-mouthed, disbelieving.
So you're packing up and leaving?
The question is aggressive, in a way that makes me think that there are right and wrong answers. I struggle to imagine any besides the one. What else should I do? I shrug helplessly. What's the point of me being here? In the past 2 months, I've seen a lot of Levi Ward. I've seen him happy, focused, upset, sad, exultant, angry, horny, honest, disappointed, and various combinations of all these things. The way he's looking at me right now, though, that's something else, beyond all of it. Levi comes closer and opens his mouth, meaning to say something, then immediately turns around and paces away, shaking his head furiously. He takes a deep breath and another, but when he looks at me again, he's hardly calmer.
Are you serious?
Icy. His voice, his eyes, the line of his jaw, pure ice. Levi, my presence here was always contingent upon my role in Blink.
Was. But things have changed.
What has changed?
I don't know. Maybe the fact that we've been together every second of the past 2 weeks, that we've made love every single night, that I know that you sigh in your sleep, that you floss like a maniac, that you taste like honey everywhere.
I feel my cheeks heat. What does that even mean?
Are you serious?
He repeats.
All of that. That was just passing time while you were in Houston? Fucking? Is that what it was?
No, no. But there's a difference between just passing time and—
And staying? And committing? And actually trying? Is that what you mean?
I what? Am speechless, confused, scared? I don't know what to say or what he wants. We're friends, good friends, who have sex, who are always going to go their separate ways, like everyone does. Levi, this was never meant to. I'm just trying to be honest.
Honest.
He lets out a noiseless, bitter laugh, stares at the hummingbird feeder, his tongue roaming the inside of his cheek.
Honesty. You want some honesty?
Yes. I just want to be as honest as possible.
Here's the honesty. I'm in love with you. But that's not news. Not to me and not to you, I don't think. Not if you're honest with yourself, which you say you are, right?
My eyes widen. He powers on, ruthless, merciless. Levi Ward, force of nature, sucking the air out of my lungs.
Here's something else that's honest. You're in love with me, too.
Levi, I shake my head, panic licking up my spine.
But you're scared. You're scared shitless, and I don't blame you. Tim was a piece of shit, and I want to cut off his balls. Your best friend acted supremely selfishly when you needed her the most. Your parents died when you were a child. And then your extended family. I don't know, maybe they tried their best, but they completely fucked up at giving you the sense of stability you needed. Your sister, whom you clearly adore, is constantly gone. And don't think I don't see the way you obsessively check your phone when she doesn't reply to your texts for longer than 10 minutes. I get it. Why wouldn't you be afraid that she'll be taken away from you? Everyone else was. Every single person you've cared about has disappeared from your life, one way or another.
I don't know how he manages to look so angry, so calm, so compassionate at the same time.
I understand. I can be patient. I've tried, will try to be patient, but I need something. I need you to understand that this is not a book you're writing. We're not two characters you can keep apart because it makes for a literary ending. These are our lives, B.
There's a tear sliding down my neck. Another, a wet splotch against my collarbone. I screw my eyes shut. When we went to the conference, and I saw Tim, he nods. It was upsetting, very. But after a while, I realized that I didn't really feel anything for him. Not anymore. And it was nice. That's what I want, you know? I want nice.
I've had so little of it. I was always, always being left behind. And the only way to not be left behind is to leave first. I wipe my cheek with the back of my hand, sniffling. If nice means being alone, then so be it.
I can give you nice. I can give you better than nice. I can give you everything.
He smiles at me, full of hope.
You don't even have to admit to yourself that you love me, Bea. God knows I love you enough for the both of us. But I need you to stay. I need you to stick around. Not in Houston if you don't want to. I'll follow you if you ask me to, but...
And when you get tired of me? I'm a wet, trembling mess. When you can't be around anymore. When you meet someone else.
I won't,
he says. And I hate how sure, how resigned he sounds. You don't know that. You can't know that, you...
There hasn't been anyone else.
His jaw tenses and works.
Since the first moment I saw you, since the first moment I talked to you and made an ass of myself, there hasn't been anyone else.
Does he? He doesn't mean it. He can't mean that.
Yes,
he says ardently, reading my mind.
In all the ways you're imagining. If you're going to decide, you should have the facts. I know you're scared. Do you think I'm not scared?
Not the way I am.
I spent years, years, hoping to find another who could measure up, hoping to feel something, anything for someone else. And now you're here, and I have had you, Bea. I know how it can be. You think I don't know what it feels like, to want something so much you're afraid to let yourself take it, even when it's in front of you? Do you think I'm not fucking scared?
He exhales, running a hand through his hair.
Bea, you want to belong. You want someone who won't let go. I'm it. I didn't let go of you for years, and I didn't even have you. But you need to let me.
It's difficult looking at him, because my eyes are blurry, because he leaves me nothing to hide behind, because it reminds me of the past few weeks together. Elbows brushing in the kitchen, cat puns, fights over what music to put on in the car, and then talking over it anyway. Kisses on the forehead when I'm still asleep, little bites on my breasts, my hips, my neck, all over me. The smell of hummingbird mint right before sunset. Laughing because we made a 6-year-old laugh. His wrong opinions on Star Wars. The way he holds me through the night. The way he holds me when I need him. I think of the past few weeks with him, of a lifetime without him, of what it would do to me to have even more and then lose all of it. I think of everything I've made myself give up, of the cats I won't allow myself to adopt, of the gut-wrenching work that goes into mending a broken heart. Levi cups my face, forehead touching mine. His hands... They are my home.
Bea, don't take this from us,
he murmurs, ragged, careful, hopeful.
Please.
I've never wanted anything more than to say yes. I've never wished to reach for something as I do now, and I've never been so utterly, petrifyingly scared to lose something. I make myself look at Levi. My voice shakes, and I say, I'm sorry. I can't. He closes his eyes, staving off a violent wave of something. But after a while, he nods. He just nods without saying anything. A simple, quick movement. Then he lets go of me, puts his hand in his pocket, takes something out and sets it on the table. The loud click echoes through the room.
This is for you.
My heart gives a hard thud. What is it? He gives me a small, pained smile. My stomach twists harder.
Just something else to be scared about.
I stare at the door long after he is gone. Long after I can't hear his steps anymore. Long after the noise of his truck's engine pulls out of the parking lot. Long after I've exhausted my tears and long after my cheeks dry. I stare at the door.
thinking that in just 2 days, I've lost everything I care about all over again. Maybe bad things do come in threes after all.
24. Right temporal lobe. Aha. Might be a bit late in the game to pull my mad scientist origin story out of its holster, but I'm sitting in the dark, staring at a less than flattering reflection of my splotchy face in the balcony doors, the purple of my hair nearly brown, a trick of the light. Someone just ransacked my pockets and stole my most important belongings, and that someone is me. I'm feeling very Dr. Marie Sklodowska Curie, circa 1911, and I guess it's self-disclosure o'clock. Originally, I wanted to be a poet, like my mom. I'd write little sonnets about all sorts of stuff. The rain, pretty birds, the mess Rika made in the kitchen when she tried to bake a cherry pie. Kittens playing with yarn, the works. Then we turned 10 and we moved for the fourth time in 5 years. This time to a mid-sized French town at the border with Germany, where my father's eldest brother had a construction business. He was kind. His wife was kind, if strict. His kids, in their late teens, were kind. The town was kind. My sister's best friend, Inez, was kind. There was lots of kindness going around. A couple of weeks after moving, I wrote my first poem about loneliness. Frankly, it was embarrassingly bad. 10-year-old B was an emo princess of darkness. I'd quote the most dramatic verses here, but then I'd have to kill myself and everyone who read them. Still,